you don't have to do it the same way I do.
Oh, sorry. Is that copyright infringement?
It's not like a echo into a canyon or something.
Yeah, I don't want to copy your style. Your distinct hello style. So, hello.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But not in the way that you do it, in a different way. Hello.
Hello.
When you say goodbye, I say
hello. Yeah, we're the Beatles now. Mm-hmm. What's going on? How's it hanging? How you been?
I don't know. I feel like I'm in a time loop. I feel tired and busy and but it's like I always feel like is it that I always feel tired and busy? Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, I think that. Mm-hmm. I agree also.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what my watch says about the amount of sleep I got, I always feel terrible.
Yeah, I still don't do the sleep tracking.
You don't have to. You just install the app and then you just leave it alone. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, but then why would I need to know if I don't need to do anything?
Because then you can occasionally look at it and be like, oh, I feel extra crappy today and I wonder why. And then you look at it and you're like, oh, I got 15 minutes of deep sleep. That's why.
Yeah, but what if I just said, I probably didn't get a good night's sleep, and then just didn't have to worry about having the watch on my wrist tonight?
You know, the best thing about improving your future is not learning from your past. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lesson both in this movie and that can be taken from quantifying things about your own personal life.
If my sleep tracking was half of this candy bar, then I don't need to know about the half that I ate.
You know, I wonder if you sleep good or terrible on mushrooms. I've never done mushrooms.
I don't know. I wonder how, if you go into this time loop in this movie and you wake up in the states that they are in, do you always feel as crappy as you do that same morning when you wake up, or do you feel differently because your mind was going through something else before you woke up? And do you dream between the time your eyes close and when you wake up? Did it blow your mind?
There was several questions in one. I don't think there's time to dream, so I'm going to say no on the dreams, which is kind of a nightmare, I guess. Also, I don't know, does it feel even longer? Your days feel even longer because there is no unconscious period of time where you're like not awake and stuff. Yeah. But you're kind of resting.
Yeah, because your brain needs sleep in order to rest. Because otherwise, it doesn't work so good. So, like, do you wake up feeling as rested as you always did, every single time, or do you have like a different level of rest based on what you were up to the day beforehand? Because if you're doing mushrooms and then you go to sleep, I imagine you feel differently than if you were studying quantum mechanics on your laptop.
Yeah, I was going to go more like, if you had a hangover on that one day that you had a time loop, you wake up with a horrible hangover every single day, because that would be terrible. But I think that's probably how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense, except, you know, it's just that your mind and your body are intertwined in a way that I don't think that they're necessarily depicted as being in this movie. Because it seems that their physical forms are propelled into the future, but part of what makes your physical body what it is also the stuff that's forming your brain. So like, you can't just reset your memories don't just like port over. Like the topology and the way that your brain works and the actual chemistry of it changes. So I don't know how that functions necessarily. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's why they're also deranged in the movie.
Because they've been essentially awake for, you know, 100 years straight or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, I was watching this is an interesting thing about this movie. Speaking of time loops, at the beginning of this thing called the pandemic, there was the Sundance purchase that Hulu made of buying Palm Springs and then releasing Palm Springs on Hulu, and then they released a commentary version of the movie. So if you go to the Palm Springs like movie page or whatever it is, whatever the nomenclature for that is in Hulu. And then you go down to the extras section. There is an hour and 30 minute commentary thing where it's the movie playing with commentary, but they do it like a Zoom meeting or a Microsoft Teams meeting where like
when it puts in a picture with other people's faces.
Yeah. And so you see Sandberg and Kristen Milioti and the writer and the director as like little floating head like Zoom boxes coming in on the side whenever they talk, and then they you know disappear off to the side. Presumably the writer and director were not on the same call as everybody else because it doesn't feel that way when you watch it, but according to the writer and director and Sandberg, like they never really nailed down an exact specific number of a window of time for how long this has been. But
and it's not sort of in the way that people with Groundhog Day have kind of gone back and like calculated how long it would take to do certain things.
Yeah, because they haven't depicted everything that they're experiencing. And since we start in the loop at an unknown point with Andy Samberg, we don't know how long he's been in it. And they speculate, according to them, that it's anywhere between 40 years and 40 billion. So anything in there. Oh, so
the low bar is 40 years?
Yeah, like because they just assume that there have been so many loops through this and that he's given up by this point, which makes a little bit of sense because he seemingly did all the things where you like act out and like try to like defy the system or whatever and sort of like break what reality around you, but then gave up on it and he just does reality in order to like be happy. And then does a little manipulation along the way because of how many times he's gone through this, enough times to like study where people fall during a dance, and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's not like he just did that on the last loop through. He's perfected, everything that he's doing over the course of many loops. So it seems a little more believable that way. And I'm also glad that they chose, to start this movie on, Sandberg's character being at this point where he's mostly through this process and has sort of like given up on everything, because I think that makes it more interesting when Kristen Milioti's character is introduced, because she's your audience surrogate and you go on that ride of explaining everything with her. But at the same time, you have somebody who's actually been through this psychological process of these loops, so that you don't have to be the audience member sort of stumbling around with someone as they figure out they're basically in Groundhog Day. You can shorthand that. And I think it's, I know that I for sure wrote off this movie initially when the previews and stuff came out last year, because I was just like, yeah, so it's Groundhog Day. You guys just, you did Groundhog Day, but you put the Lonely Island guy in it. It's just like, who cares? He's going to sing about Twizzlers and Red Vines. Like you need something else. And I do think that they actually, in fairness to the writers, I do think they actually brought something else to it. But I don't,
you've got the two characters. You've got the character who's experiencing this all for the first time and freaking out for people in the audience who want that. And then you've got the jaded sort of, cynical character who might be the people who have watched Groundhog Day, and that's Andy Samberg just sort of rolling his eyes at the whole thing, saying just like, just roll with it, man. Just imagine what it would be like if you were basically a god and every day played over and over again and nothing mattered, and you can look at it from that perspective if you want, and the audience can sort of bounce between either perspective, whichever one suits them best.
Yeah, and I think that it is also interesting that they chose not to make this a moralistic loop, like it was in Groundhog Day.
Oh, yes.
Because in that one, it just takes a long time for him to realize that he needs to be a good person in order to get out of this. And in this movie, it is one of the things that she initially tries and fails at
They're like, let's get this out of the way. It's not going to work.
Yeah. And so this movie is very much in dialogue with Groundhog Day, almost as if it were like a sequel to the Groundhog Day universe, except the mechanics of it are slightly skewed. We never, we never find out what the thing is inside of the cave that causes the loop, because you don't ever see it. It's just this orange energy that's glowing. And that's fine. I don't care. It didn't need to be like a crashed alien spaceship or a meteorite or anything. That wouldn't have helped. But the mechanic of having a location to have this happen also made it interesting, because that can explain how somebody can join the loop with you, as opposed to Groundhog Day, where he's just in that loop by himself, and that's it. No one can come along and enter it. And this movie...
And in Groundhog Day, there's really no explanation sort of how he gets there.
No, there's no explanation for how he enters the loop, and the explanation for how he gets out of the loop is because he's just not a jerk anymore. And you can't necessarily say that that makes any sort of like sense, really, but this movie decided to try to make it seem like it was scientific in some way, and that it...
Yeah, it's quantum physics and stuff.
Yeah. You know, there's some problems with that, because, like, what does that have to do with your sleep cycles? Or if you have multiple people in there, what does that have to do with their sleep cycles? And, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, I think quantum physics revolves around the Gregorian calendar and the 24-hour day, so... No, I don't know. Consciousness is directly linked to the universe, so when your brain's power level drops below a certain number of volts, then you... It triggers the reset button.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Tim Ferriss. But the the thing...
I don't even get that joke. I don't know why I'm laughing. I don't know.
He's the 4-hour work week guy. Anyway, the
Oh, that's right. I've seen the cover of that book.
Yeah. It makes it so that there's a mechanism she can study to get them out of there, and then it becomes a question of do you go along with this process if you know you can do it, and that results in a different kind of question of. Different kind of question than what if you were just a really good person. So I like that, especially when you're trying to play out with multiple people.
And until the end of the movie, it's unclear, again, as she says, not sure if it works or gets you out or if you die or whatever. But I think the broader theme is that she's making an effort and using her infinite time loop for self-improvement rather than self-destruction. So, yeah. You know. Yeah, etc. That's the way to get yourself out of any sort of problem and depression is to work on it, apparently.
Yeah, and had this been a Christopher Nolan movie, we wouldn't have seen what happened after they exploded.
Yeah, it would have blown up and then it would have rolled credits.
Yeah, but this movie is not that kind of movie. This movie is like a, hey, it's all great.
It's a romantic comedy sci-fi thing.
It doesn't need to be that heavy. I feel like this movie fulfills...
It's also 90 minutes long, so it's like, what do you expect?
It's a 90-minute comedy.
It covers a lot of ground in 90 minutes, to be honest. Like, you know, they do great character stuff, they do plot stuff, they do sci-fi stuff. There's multiple plot lines. You got the Roy plot line, you got the relationship plot line, you got the, you know, the backstory with the Abe fella. They got a lot of stuff going on here in 90 minutes, and I think it all works pretty well.
Yeah, and I have to say, while I found none of it surprising or shocking, because a lot of it relies on Groundhog Day and also the economy of characters and also Chekhov's time loop, like you know that when they mention things in certain points in this movie that they're come up later, like the orchid explosion by Fournier, being the hair scent thing that she has, like that is not just there because it was a funny thing to say. It's there because it's a plot point and it comes up multiple times. And
if he was just hitting on her, it seemed a little bit odd, but also, you know, that's that odd scene where he knows everything. So maybe he's just using his weird powers to hit on her.
Well, and also he may have pretended to have been guessing, but he may already have known that because another thing about this movie that was not a surprise is when he says that he had sex with a bunch of people multiple times in the course of the events of this movie, and she asks him point blank whether or not they have had sex, and then he says no, and that was an immediate lie.
he says, my memory's pretty bad, but I don't think so. It's like,
yeah.
Your memory's not very bad. You know when that guy's going to fall over. You push the chair underneath him.
Yeah. I mean,
although it is fun to see, like, it's pretty cool how quickly, like, you establish the loop and then the stuff that is part of the loop so that the stuff outside of the loop sticks out. Like, you know, when Roy shoots an arrow into his back, like that becomes like the excitement for that day, because you're like, oh, this is the part that's not predictable. And it's kind of amusing to watch these people play in this sort of like, you know, the world is dancing around them, but they can sort of just like take a sidestep and go do their own thing for a little bit.
Yeah. And Roy is also an interesting wrinkle to this process, because it kind of lets you know why you wouldn't want to just drag in other people into this process with you, because it is kind of a curse. And if you drag in somebody who also views it as kind of a curse, then it may not be so much fun to be around that person, as they shoot you repeatedly with arrows and like electrocute your balls and then set you on fire with kerosene while you're in a pool.
Waterboard you.
Yeah.
So yeah, Roy spent his time clearly researching torture techniques instead of, you know, improving himself or whatever.
Yeah. Although at the end of it, he's like, okay, I've come to terms with everything. Like, there's no more that I could really do that's going to be effective. And also, you know, it hurts when stuff happens to you.
He's making salmon. He's got a beer. It looks like a nice day in his backyard, even though his son is watering a dog turd.
Yeah, that was very funny. It didn't need to be in there, but this is, you know, I feel like appropriate for the tone of the film. It's just like, yeah, you know what? He's going to have to just grin and bear it for all of the stuff that's going on in his life in Irvine. And everybody should have their own Irvine. This place of mediocrity and happiness. Yeah. It's an interesting thing in terms of contrasting that with our other two characters, and why you wouldn't want to like make other people go on this journey with you if you didn't have to do that. And he initially does discourage Kristen Milioti from coming along on this journey, because he says, don't follow me, and goes into the like vortexy thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he decided to hang out by the vortexy thing, but you know, there they are.
You know, it's a spot in the desert he's very familiar with. He probably knows all the, you know, cool rocks to hang out on and stuff.
Yeah. Also, this movie, while being called Palm Springs, is not filmed in Palm Springs. This movie is filmed in Santa Clarita.
I saw that they lost their whatever sort of tax incentive that they were going to get to let them shoot in Palm Springs.
No, they have the tax incentive. They just had to use it in the Los Angeles area.
So that's okay.
Yeah, that's why they shot in Santa Clarita.
So they get you.
Yeah. But the thing with the shooting in Santa Clarita is it's sort of like similar in temperature and color, but
desertiness.
Yeah. But if you go to Palm, if you've ever been to Palm Springs, there is a very distinctive topology to the place where everything's incredibly flat, and then there's an enormous mountain range on one side, as opposed to in this movie where there are some boulders and stuff and some rocks and things. But it's I would have believed it was Joshua Tree rather than like Palm Springs, but you know, the movie wants it to work in Palm Springs in that way. And you also don't really like, in terms of like the feel of the place or anything, nothing about it is particularly Palm Springsy.
They tried to find a couple of mid-century modern looking homes.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, there are several places in the Southern California area that this could stand in for, and certainly several places in the Southern California area did stand in for Palm Springs. It just didn't feel as distinctly Palm Springsy as I would have liked it to be. Because I was, as a matter of fact, I was in Palm Springs last weekend.
You're a Palm Springs aficionado.
Yeah, a Palm Springs expert. The senior Palm Springs expert on this podcast.
That's true.
It's got a very distinctive vibe, and it's a shame that they couldn't tap into some of that at least, because we really only see the rancho that the wedding party is at, including the I guess field of rocks or wherever where they're actually holding the outdoor reception and ceremony, and then the mm-hmm. pile of rocks where the cave is, and the bar that they visit frequently throughout the course of the film, which is obviously a set, and the home of the people who are out of town that they can use as sort of a base of operations for a couple of scenes. and also serves as our finale to the film when the family actually returns. That's how you know time has moved forwards. LOL, pizza refs. But the rest of it really isn't as, I don't know. There's nothing about it. Like, you're not like in downtown Palm Springs. There's nothing about it where you're in a Palm Springs location that would be interesting.
Do they have burrito trucks in Palm Springs?
I would assume that they do. I didn't really go to any food trucks during the pandemic myself, personally.
Did you have a pizza raft?
No, I didn't have a pizza raft. We got pool noodles from the Albertsons. Because they had a partially deflated whale raft at the Airbnb.
Nice.
And we just decided not to touch that because we didn't really have any way to inflate that and didn't want to put our mouths to it. For many obvious reasons.
It's the worst that could happen.
Yeah, but the Albertsons, they got pool noodles that are like $2 per pool noodle. So we started out with 3 pool noodles, but then the next day I was like, we need more pool noodles.
You started out with an uneven number of pool noodles? What are you doing?
Well, there was the 3 of us. A third vaccinated person was available.
Okay.
So then I went and got more pool noodles. So then we each had 2 pool noodles, and you could kind of like sit on one as like a bowed sort of like a floaty thing. And then you could have the other one under your arms to like keep your arms up. And then you just kind of sit in like a pool noodle chair. And then the jet in the pool was so strong that it caused like a little circular vortex in the pool. So you would just sit there and it'd be like a lazy river where you just like rotate through the whole entire pool, just by sitting there. It was pretty nice as far as pools go. But then the weather got cold for the last day that we were there. So it was sad. Sad times. Couldn't use the pool noodles.
And they were wasted. Did you leave them for the home or did you take them with you?
Yeah, I left them for the home. Jason was like, oh, we shouldn't waste the money. We should keep them for next time. And I was like, why do we need to keep $6 worth of pool noodles for next time? I'm sorry, $12 worth of pool noodles for next time. We can afford to just buy pool noodles as needed and leave them in Airbnbs as needed.
Yeah. Also, they start to dissolve and degrade in the sun and a just dry environment. So you don't want to hang on to pool noodles for an extended period of time.
Well, his plan was just to leave them in the garage with everything else. Just, to let the spiders, I guess, dwell in them.
Yeah. I mean, they'll probably be fine until the next time you're at a pool, which probably isn't too far off since it's summertime, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no pools here. But back to Palm Springs. As a weird aside, remember when Seth was on and we talked about Twister? And he brought up his favorite line, cold dranks. And he said dranks like that because of the way that it was said in the film. And then when I went to Palm Springs a while ago, they had a t-shirt shop. And in the t-shirt shop, they had a shirt that said Palm Springs, and they like spelled it out with a lot of A's, and I said I would really like to buy that, and so I bought it, and so I have a t-shirt that says Palm Springs, and so it's very loosely tied to something that was said on this podcast in regards to a movie, but at the same time, every time I say Palm Springs, I also think of that stupid t-shirt and then the way that says the thing, which is the way that it was said in the movie. But anyway, I digress.
I appreciate your effort into tying it into the show's history.
Everything's connected.
When are we going to get a photo of the shirt?
I don't know. I can take one later. Also, I bought it a size that's too small, so I don't generally wear the shirt. It's a little sausage casing-y.
Make sure you put it on for the photo.
No. Absolutely not.
Hop in a pool with some pool noodles and then take the photo.
That's not the best if you want to like capture the springs on it. You really want to like make that the focus. I'll just lay it out completely flat, take a boring photo, and send that to you.
Great. Thank you. I'll put it in the show notes. Maybe. If I remember.
If any of us remember, let's be honest. But
that's the thing, man. We remember. The world resets and we remember.
Yeah, but except sometimes we forget things, apparently, if it's been a while. And we've apparently been drinking heavily for 40 years.
Yeah, honestly, the most true things about this movie are pain is real. We forget things after a while. And then drinking is a reasonable solution.
No. The movie is actually saying that's the opposite of what you want because you're numbing.
At least.
Yeah, you're numbing yourself to the pain of the real world, and trying to hide from things going forward so that you don't get hurt or you don't hurt others or that you don't have to deal with problems in your life.
I mean, I could have used a coda to the story that just admitted that occasionally numbing things is fine.
Well, I would have liked something about Sandberg's life that he was trying to get away from. We do get at the very end that he has a dog that's apparently been in a kennel the entire time he's been in the time loop. I mean, not that the dog knows or cares, but
yeah. So do you think his memory was slightly restored when he got out of the loop, or was he literally just suppressing and like lying most of the time when he said he didn't remember his job and stuff?
I think he was suppressing and lying because he wanted to stay there, and he didn't want to distract her with things that didn't have anything to do with the loop, since that's really all that mattered to them, was basically his argument about it. But at the same time, it does make it more mysterious, I guess, because we don't really want the focus to be like, oh, well, he's actually here in this loop and prefers it because he doesn't like his dead-end job, because then it's like, well, we don't care about his job. That's not the point of the movie. The point of the movie is
we do care about his dog, though.
Yeah, well, the point of the movie is his relationship with her and how his inability to share things with her can cause issues. So maybe he should have told her what his job was at some point, even if it was boring. But I assume that happens off screen at the very end as we pan up past the Brontosauruses or Brachiosauruses or whatever, or dinosaurs.
Veggiesauruses, whatever they are.
Yeah. love our dinosaurs. But, you know, it's not a particularly complicated... I mean, it's complicated to plan and shoot and make, but it's not complicated mm-hmm. to digest the film as viewed, you know?
No. That's why it was the perfect pandemic movie back in, what was it, July or June or whatever, 2020?
I don't know. I thought it was, like, May or something. Who knows? Who could say?
This says July 10th mm-hmm. at the top of IMDb. But yeah, I this is the third time I've seen this movie. We watched it when it was new and enjoyed it. And then I watched it a few months after that. It was like, oh yeah, still a good movie. It's not just because, you know, we were in a depressing, hopeless time. And watching it again now, yeah, I still like it. Still a good movie.
Yeah. Also, another movie I was going to... Because we did a Paycheck. And so that's loosely why... I was thinking time stuff and also being in Palm
Memories
Springs.
And kind of loop things and mm-hmm. kind of the opposite of Palm Springs because time doesn't loop, mm-hmm. but you lose the memories versus keeping the memories and having the loop.
Yeah, and you have you can see the future.
Yeah, this is the anti-paycheck, which is
good.
The highest of compliments we could pay to this movie, probably.
Yeah, but... Yeah, another thing I was thinking of because of Palm Springs, it was like, oh, well, maybe we'll do Ingrid Goes West. And I was like, no, that's a bit of a downer. And the ending is terrible. So I don't know if you would appreciate it necessarily as much as Palm Springs. So I'm glad we ended up doing this one.
I haven't seen that movie. Is that movie a time movie?
No,
time loop movie?
There's no time loop. It would have only been linked because of the location. It's a identity theft movie.
It takes place in Palm Springs. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, sort of Joshua Tree, Palm Springs ish adjacent desert. There's California desert.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay,
yeah. Anyway, it's mainly about Instagram being bad. But then the movie doesn't know what to say with anything, so then it just ends. So don't lose sleep over not having seen that. But yeah, the tenuous connection was just thinking of Southern California desert things.
So the California desert's on your mind these days, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, desert frame of mind. Because I mean, it's nice to escape it all, go somewhere else. You know, as the movie depicts, you go float in a pool somewhere, have a beer or just several Aperol spritzes.
Have a beer and a food truck burrito.
Mm-hmm. Just float. Just all float on. Okay, as the Mouse's Modest once said.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Oh, I did like the music selection in this film. That was good. That is some nice flavor to it, and also the score was interesting without being too techno or too weird. So that was fun.
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of dancing both in the wedding part and then in the sort of finding your own fun montage stuff that lends itself to some nice fun music.
Yeah, I like when they learn that little ladies routine thing that they do.
The neckerchiefs and the denim jackets is great.
And the sunglasses.
If you're stuck in a time loop and you're not like using it to have coordinated like group dances or flash mobs or whatever to screw with people, like, are you even like trying?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I don't fault them for that necessarily. One thing I would be worried about if I was in a time loop, though, is like, what if for some reason the loop just ends and you're not like consulted about it? There's no outward evidence of it. You didn't do anything necessarily that caused it to
catches
end.
You off guard. You're not paying attention.
Yeah. Just like, what if you wake up the next morning or, and then all of a sudden everything is as it was, like it was just the next day and you don't have any sort of like, you didn't do anything. You didn't say anything. You didn't trigger anything, but for whatever reason, whatever the stupid thing was that you just did, is now your future history.
If you're like at like peak stupidity and you're like jumping off the roof of something and you broke your leg and you're like, tomorrow it would be fine, and then suddenly it's not fine.
Yeah.
That's your worry.
Yeah, yeah. Or like when she first gets into the loop, I like how they did that editorially, where they followed his story for a little bit and then they show her arrive at the pool and chuck cheap beer at him, like as if it were bullets going into the water. And she confronts him, and we see then part of the nonlinear nature of like her side of the events, and then her sister, the bride, comes running out there and slips and just cracks three of her front teeth, and they have to do that whole thing of like her crying with blood streaming down her face and like this whole like mess of a situation. Peter Gallagher's talking about how he found a dentist that'll glue her teeth back on.
Yeah, so before Sarah could even really like get into the whole like what is happening, explain this whole time loop thing to me, like she has to stand there with her mouth wide open and watch her sister just bleeding from the mouth and just go, let's get back to the whole stuck in a time loop thing here, but like I cannot believe what is happening in front of me.
Yeah, and apparently she lobbied heavily in order to the throw up in a bucket. Like that was her idea. That was her idea. Yeah, it was a good idea. Because it's a lot to take in, to digest in that moment. You can see, for example, the benefits of being in a loop where that's just going to reset. But if for some reason your loop just like terminated, and then that injury was there permanent forever, then you'd be a little upset about it.
Yeah. I'd be more concerned about like the time loop doing like a Skype thing where it like lags for a bit, but then like suddenly it all catches up. Like, all of the consequences of all of your day loops like land on the one day when you get out. So like every bad thing that you did suddenly is just like you're paying for those consequences on the day that you get out.
Well, the movie, the way she like does it, where she decides, for if you're listening to this for some reason and haven't watched the movie, and I don't know why you are doing that, but if the explosion occurs and knocks them out of this energy box, she can't guarantee that they will be anywhere good on the other side of that, whether or not it's the next day or they'll even be on the same day or it'll be some weird point in the future or the past or anything like that. She has no way to guarantee what's going to happen. And I think that is interesting. Of course, the movie doesn't want to deal with that because that's not the kind of movie that this is. But like, what if you were propelled, you know, into an equal number of days forwards from what you had been in this loop the entire time?
That would be weird.
Yeah, like every opposite causes an equal and opposite reaction. Like all of a sudden you're just like slingshotted from how far you've been stuck in the loop all the way to the that point in the future.
Yeah, doesn't somebody say that? Could be tomorrow, could be today, could be 40 years from now or something.
Yeah, like, well, what if he was all of a sudden 40 years in the future?
That would suck.
Yeah, and keep in mind, it seems that their consciousness is whatever their consciousness is in the terms of this movie, because as we've discussed, there are biochemical things and like the topography of your brain, it's not going with it. But for whatever reason, there's this abstract whatever that makes up you, and that can be propelled through time, as evidenced in the mid credits, like I don't know, 2 seconds into the credit scene where J.K. Simmons arrives at the wedding and talks to Sandberg, and it's not the Sandberg that's been in the loop. It's mm-hmm. the default Sandberg who never was in the loop.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, if you're slingshotted 40 years into the future, and it's the version of you that had been stuck in that the entire time, and you're in the future now in a body that had been going through time for 40 years, like, with all the decisions that were based on stuff that you had no control over, like, how torturous would that be, too? Because you have...
Or if you just, like, wake up and then, like, you have to search your email to find out if you, like, had been to the hospital because your leg really hurts, and you're like, oh, yeah, you got hit by a car 10 years ago, but you were still in the loop.
Yeah, because you would have no way of knowing that, because your consciousness would have been a completely different consciousness from what's there. And
so you're merging with a different you from a different multiverse and stuck with their decisions, which is probably a little disorienting.
Yeah, well, because they merge with the them that never went in the loop, but they have all their memories from the loop. So they have replaced a existing consciousness of somebody who had gone through this loop. Who had gone through the process, who gone through that day, gone through November 9th without actually going through that loop. Because that's not obviously not the person that entered, the November 10th day until then.
Yeah. You know, yeah. There's probably definitely a version of this movie where they come out of the time loop and they don't remember each other and then they go their separate ways or something, or they have to like reintroduce themselves to each other and fall in love all over again. Like, there's definitely a really cheesy version of this where they're like introducing themselves to each other at like the wedding and like starting from scratch, and you know, it was destined all along or some silly crap like that.
Yeah. And you know, there's the whole thing of like maybe they don't wind up together even afterwards and stuff if everything resets, because you don't really have any way of knowing any of that stuff. But this, like we've mentioned several times, this is not the kind of movie that is, and they want to have the nice romantic comedy where everybody's happy at the end, which is fine. I don't begrudge it that, because it's not like it's a Christopher Nolan time travel or time displacement or whatever movie, and then all of a sudden it turns out in this last final seconds that everybody's happy floating in a pool, because like that would have been weird, and I would have faulted the movie for that. But this is the movie it was the entire time it was happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing that I'm curious about is, how do you feel about the handling of Sarah's character in regards to her redemption and also the circumstances that led into her initial day?
Well, I mean, you know, she's an advocate very early on that you have to address these things front on, you know, go talk to Roy, apologize, do what you got to do. I mean, I don't think that's just partly when she's delusional and thinking that, being, selfless is the way out. So, you know, part of the whole growth through this thing that obviously she gets there before he does, is that, you know, you got to address your problems head on and, deal with them. Though it seems to be implied in this, in the final version of the wedding there, that, the way she sets things right is by, you know, giving Abe a death glare during her speech and basically like, you know, all right, that'll do it. I set him straight. And you know, that's the best I can hope for. So, you know, What do you say? Do you say she really needs to like tear the whole thing up, or do what's best for them and try and let them be happy and stuff like that? What would it be in service of? Like, if she was mm-hmm. the main character of the movie, obviously, you know, caring about herself more than the rest of the characters, she would go blow up their relationship and say, I feel like I need to do this for me. But for them, I think that everyone involved in the situation realized that it was a bad thing. And she basically puts her foot down and says, all right, that was enough of that. And don't ever do anything like that again. I don't know. I guess potentially implied is that she's taking responsibility for what occurred, although obviously not entirely her fault. But she's basically saying, like, I'm going to take this one. And you stop being a shithead for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated situation because you don't want to ruin Tala's special day by making it about you and what you did, even though there's it was a decision that she made before the time loop. So she's stuck with that decision in a very realistic way, but has more time to think about the ramifications of that than most ordinary people might. So she could have, you know, said, this is about me. I'm going to tell you that he did this and that he's terrible and that I did this and I'm terrible and I don't deserve to be here. And she could have ruined everything that way. But instead, they're just going to have this simmering tension for the rest of their lives about the situation.
I mean, I think her sort of confidence in the speech there implies that she's got as much closure with it as she's going to be able to get. So she's moving on. But mm-hmm. not really how that works.
No, it would have been interesting to have a loop where she does confront him.
She does a little bit. Like she tells Tala at the wedding in that one where she's pretending that her selflessness solved everything, and then she yells at him when he's in the shower, but then she runs away because she has more important things to deal with.
Yeah, she didn't do a thing where she was up there. Well, not up there, but she didn't do a thing where in front of them. Before the wedding, she tells them.
She told her she was going to do it over the microphone or whatever, but then she goes and whispers in her ear.
Yeah, but they don't have a future. They don't have a version of this where they're not at the wedding and it's not a moment where it would destroy everything. Like it's not a pre-wedding thing of like, I did this and we talk about it before the wedding happens.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But
well, who has time for that? You gotta, you know,
yeah. There's stuff to do.
Get dressed, mm-hmm. get some breakfast, something, you know?
Yeah. But you know, it just isn't as pat and clean, but that's fine. It's a kind of an ambiguous situation, and it's probably beneficial to leave it like that rather than having it all have a nice, you know, nice tied up ending there, because part of the point of this is that you don't know what the future is necessarily going to bring, but you have to kind of just go with it.
Although her whole thing was like to have a connection with somebody, you gotta understand the past and the future and the present and stuff. So
yeah, but now she's going to have to deal with the consequences of her action rather than hiding.
Yeah. I wonder if they tried to do that intentionally by adding a little bit of potential distance between the two stepsisters, with, you know, the whole we have different moms and, you know, they're not super connected. Like, you know, she hates the hairspray crap or whatever that her sister got her, and her sister's very good and she's not, and she's kind of distancing herself from the family in general. So I wonder if the implied future for her is like, love my family, you're all great people, I'm gonna go out on my own and maybe we're not that close, so mm-hmm. good luck with your life or whatever.
Yeah, that could be the solution to their problem. It's distance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The sequel to this movie, everybody just gets really far away from everybody else.
You know, occasionally mm-hmm. that's fine.
Yeah, you can call it a social distancing. Mm-hmm. And you know, just never.
Maybe take 13 months away from each other and see if that relationship requires rekindling, or if you're just like, you know what, I don't need that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I think we've said all we can really say about the film that exists.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There was a brief moment you touched on it very briefly about the way that it was actually shot, with, you know, showing both perspectives when she first wakes up, his perspective that we start with, and then cutting back to her to see, you know, the differences in her experience of the same timeline. So I thought all that stuff was done pretty well, and it's fairly complicated to keep track of a lot of this stuff, and shooting this must have been really weird because they wore the exact same clothes for the entire thing and basically did the exact same stuff on the exact same sets every single day, although slightly differently. But I thought they did that pretty well, and it all seemed very believable.
Yeah, and the other thing that's complicated about this is, if you audience members are familiar with how movies are made, if you're doing stuff with a bunch of characters, like a wedding scene, and you need to do it multiple times, you're going to shoot all the wedding scene stuff in a chunk together, maybe over the course of a couple nights or whatever you have the budget for, but you're not shooting this movie chronologically. So no. You're going to ask your actors, all of them, including everybody at the wedding, to go on these journeys of these characters behaving in vastly, strangely different ways over and over and over again in many, many takes, and then taking that footage to be spliced together with stuff that doesn't exist yet, and to make it seem like it's all part of a time loop where things are not really changing except for the elements that are in motion. So that's not an easy thing to do, and I don't, you know, really want to be the editor or the director or this AD or anything.
I was gonna say I should scroll through and find the script supervisor and the assistant director, and we should give them a brief round of applause just for keeping it all together. But it's like, yeah, you're gonna have, you know, drunken, disheveled, and kind of, you know, screw it Andy Samberg from the beginning. You're gonna have depressed Andy Samberg. You're gonna have Andy Samberg in a suit very briefly, where he's got it all together. But I mean, you know, he's in the same outfit the entire time. I especially love the part where he just walks up to the cowboy guy and pulls the cocaine out of his jacket while he's in the middle of a speech, and just shouts, "You're right," and just walks away. It's pretty great.
Yeah. I mean,
J.K. Simmons is great in the movie too.
Oh, J.K. Simmons is so good in this movie. I think the tone that he strikes is pretty good. It's kind of like a I don't know, Arlie Ermy kind of a situation where he's just kind of like this very gruff. I don't want to say necessarily right wing, but he has this very strange streak of being sort of militaristic or something. Something's up with his whatever his past is, and that he also has a sort of like fun, quote unquote, side. Where
he's down to party, and that's what gets him in trouble.
Yeah, where you just like mix the things together, and it just makes it a delight every time he's on screen, either as Roy who's hunting him or as Roy who's down to party.
Mm-hmm. And as you called out, he has the greatest line when he first meets Andy Samberg about his hat.
Yeah. I like your hat. Of course you do. It's a level of confidence that I like in Roy. And when he gets, when Sarah hits him with the police cruiser and crushes his pelvis, yes. and he's on the ground and he's freaking out about that. Doesn't he say something like, what is her deal or what's up with her to Samberg? Like, what's going on?
I think he says, "Who the F was that?" While there's just blood pouring out of his mouth.
Yeah, it's so good. He strikes the right tone, and there is an appropriate amount of him in this film, because the movie is not about Roy. He just adds this interesting flavor to it. So it's good to have him show up every now and then, and including the time we spend with Roy and Irvine at his family house with his kids.
He kills Andy Samberg in the recycle bin, I think, which is, you know, that's not, I don't think Andy Samberg is recyclable.
No.
I think you got to put him in a compost bin if you got a compost bin.
Well, I don't think that's going to be a problem for anyone, because his body won't be there when someone goes to collect that.
Well, you better hope not. You better hope that like his wife doesn't go to take out the trash after dinner or something and see a body in there.
Well, you know what would be interesting is if you, going back to talking about hypothetical terrible sequel ideas, what if there was a multiverse of all of the futures that could have sprung from the second days of all of these timelines, where they're dead in some of them, or mortally wounded, or other injuries, or are in relationships or doing other things? Like, what if you could hop around and visit in on any of those multiverses, on what's actually happening?
I mean, you could do like, what if they come out on November 10th and then suddenly there's two of them in the same timeline?
Yeah. Or what if they find a different cave?
And what if there's another once in a lifetime earthquake that unveils a random cave with some sort of mystical quantum vortex in it?
Mm-hmm. Also, that was a Bronson Canyon, which is in
Bronson Pinchot is his name.
And they shoot a lot of Star Trek stuff there. is all I'm going to say.
Oh, is this the Gorn Canyon?
No. That's a rock. That's Vasquez Rocks.
Oh, sure.
That sticks up out of the ground. This is a hole in the rocks into the ground.
Hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, everybody loves rocks. And especially the really distinctive ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate this film quite a bit, and I like it, and it was exactly the right amount of it. And don't actually make any of these sequels, Andy Samberg, if you're listening.
No. That was fun. Yeah, J.K. Simmons obviously the highlight of the cast, but the cast is all very good. Misty, his girlfriend, is great. Paula's great.
I love Misty, especially in the scene where Tala's teeth are broken, and she's like trying to make it all about her.
Yeah, it was a very big day for me too.
Yeah, it's just she doesn't have as much to do with this film, of course, because it's not about her. But every time she's on screen, she's great. And when the movie initially starts and they kind of go like that forgetting Sarah Marshall route, where it's like, why is this about like a guy having a thing at this moment, where it's Andy Samberg having to like give himself a hand job as he's watching her crouch over her suitcase and yelling shit, 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 shit. Yeah. I'm not muting any of that, but just it's very funny. It is an odd choice. Also, Andy Samberg gets sodomized in the film, which is also something I wasn't really expecting.
he sleeps with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're there long enough, you know, try some stuff. Although the cut to the Peter Gallagher thing as a joke was pretty funny.
Yeah. I thought that was funny just because they cut to it. I didn't think it was real because that didn't seem to make any sense with the rest of the film. But then he's just like, yeah.
Oh, they didn't trick you with that one?
No, it wasn't a trick. It was just that it was humorous that they shot it at all.
Oh, speaking of hand related things, the bartender in the back of the car who says, I hit a guy with this car.
Yes. She was so good. I really liked her from the second she was introduced. When Tala goes up to get a glass of wine, and she during it wasn't the vows, but during part of the ceremony, she's up at the bar, which is a big no-no, FYI, for those of you in the audience who are going to weddings. She says, come on, fill me up, doll. This is not the day for moderation. And the bartender very genuinely says, it's not good wine. She's like, I don't care. Like, it's never good wine at a wedding. It's always just cheap. It's cheap swell. That's gonna give you.
Yeah, they're not gonna bring good wine.
No.
Oh wow, she was the bartender was the writer of the Borat sequel.
Well, that was a twist I was not expecting.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I assume she's not the only credited writer. Oh, there's 11 credited writers. There you go.
Knowledge.
Yeah. But yeah, she was very good. And then the whole, like, you know, I love your hair and your haircut. And she's like, yeah, me too. It's like a very weird person. Although, you know, to be a wedding bartender in a sort of vacation town like Palm Springs, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, she's speaking of seeing it all. I'm sure she's seen it all in her catering career. Mm-hmm. But
that's why I'm a fan of the basically one bar that's open at night in Sedona, because all the local people are there and you can get a great idea of what it's like to live there and work in the hotel or restaurant businesses in this particular town.
Interesting. Was it like the bar that's in the film with what's her face? Darla? Darla, yes.
There you go. No, it's not a bikerish kind of bar. It is sort of a fake Irish pub looking style bar. They got pretty good whiskey. They got pretty good whiskey, and they got a dartboard. They recently redid part of it. It's even called, what's it called, Mooney's Irish Pub or something. They're not even trying to make it like an Irish pub. It's just a kind of crappy bar. All of the locals are there, and if they find out that you're not a local, they will get very drunk and try and convince you that you got to come rent their ATVs or whatever to go out on the mountains. It's like, all right, buddy, you don't have to try and sell me. Like, I'm not that dumb of a tourist here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good bar.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, they got good good whiskey selection.
Well, the next time you and Amanda go there, you should do the 1980s dance thing. When you walk
it's
in.
Very narrow and long, so I don't know that there's much room for that. Mm. But we'll try to do a coordinated dance.
Just we'll send you a video. Just tell everybody to come outside.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, a lot of people do stand outside because, like, the patio is not very big, so, like, it just kind of spills out into the parking lot. It's not the kind of place where they care about, like, drinking in public and rules and things. People just wandering around with drinks in the parking lot.
Mm. Well, it may be good to just do that for COVID reasons for the time being then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. But what was I going to say? Because of catering. Did you ever watch Party Down?
I did not.
Mm.
I know I'm going to make several people mad by saying that. That's remind me again what it's about. Aside from being a funny, you know, comedy show ensemble thing.
Yeah, a bunch of comedians are, many of whom are.
I already got a text message. Oh, my God.
many.
You have to. It's so good.
Okay. Do I want to ask if that was a rye?
Yeah, in all caps.
it's so good. Not in all caps, but like it's a pretty good show. And it's comedians who were doing stuff before they were as well known as they are now in many regards. And so you can kind of see them doing the stuff that they are now too famous to do inside of these roles. And especially in a Starz TV show of all things. So it's pretty good. The second season, unfortunately, Jane Lynch had to leave because she was shooting Glee. That's to give you an idea of how long ago this was. And so they replaced her with Jennifer Coolidge. She's not as good at this, but you know, everybody's good. Everybody's very funny.
Jennifer Coolidge. I know her and I know that name, but I didn't put them together until just now.
Mm-hmm. We should watch Best in Show. Lady.
Oh God, I don't want to watch Best in Show. I watched Best in Show a long time ago. I don't want to see it again.
You want to watch Legally Blonde?
I've seen Legally Blonde many times.
Okay, so that's a no. I'm just trying to think of Jennifer Coolidge shows that you would go along with.
Two Broke Girls.
Oh.
She was a regular on that.
Oof.
With her Polish accent? Whatever she was trying to do was very bad.
Well, that was certainly the highlight of her career. Thank you for pointing that one out to me, Dan.
Yeah, they did many seasons of that show.
They do lots of seasons of lots of shows. We're not going to do King of Queens on this. So.
Yeah, I think we probably should put down in writing a strict no Kevin James policy for this podcast.
I think that's the kind of policy that's just we don't even have to worry about writing down.
yeah.
But I think we're gonna forget. Like,
nothing will make me find my remote control faster than turning on the TV or something, and then Grown Ups being on or something. It's like, oh God, change it.
Yeah. Oh God, remember when they were trying to make him a romantic comedy lead, and so they had him in Zookeeper, a movie I worked on, and they.
I haven't seen Zookeeper, but I've seen Hitch. Yeah.
And have you seen I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry?
I believe I have seen most of it or enough of it. Yeah, I know it. Yeah.
It's very bad. I think everyone who made that should be ashamed in a way that I feel strongly about. But
that was Adam Sandler didn't even try to like not put on basketball shorts for a movie.
No. And for speaking of people who are otherwise considered to be annoying, I was never a huge Adam Sandberg fan.
Sandler or Sandberg?
Sandberg, this movie. The
oh, okay. Guy Andy Sandberg. You said Adam Sandberg.
I mean,
Sandberg.
I'm not a huge Adam Sandler fan either, but, you know, he that ship has sailed.
In 50 First Dates, he puts the ship together and then he sails it.
Hmm. But the other one, the younger Adam.
Andy is his name.
Andy, whatever. Andy Sandberg, Adam Sandberg, who cares? I was never a huge fan.
Ryan Sandberg was a baseball player.
Okay. Well, I don't think he was in this movie or on SNL, I was never a huge fan of his. Mm-hmm. And I found his sort of smirking smarminess to be annoying, but I begrudgingly admit that he has the acting chops to be good and charming in these sorts of situations. And I know a lot of people like him on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't really be that surprising, but yeah.
Were you turned off by the way his digital shorts on SNL became such big memes for a period of time, the whole, you know, Lonely Island stuff?
Yeah, he just had a shtick of like, hey, I'm on a boat and red vines. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see Laser Cats with Spielberg?
No.
That might be their best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mostly because Lorne Michaels is just like, this is bullshit, get out of here. And Steven Spielberg is literally in it.
Yeah. Well, that's good for him. He needs the work.
Yeah. But speaking of confusing the Sandler Sandberg, have you ever seen That's My Boy?
No.
A movie where Adam Sandler plays Andy Samberg's father, estranged father, who had... So when he was in middle school or something, he slept with a teacher who was Susan Sarandon and had a child when he was like 14. And that became Andy Samberg. And Vanilla Ice is in the movie also.
Oh, good.
It is possibly one of the worst movies ever made.
Well,
if you can imagine that.
I can imagine lots of things, Dan.
Imagine doing like a Boston, New Jersey kind of accent to the entire movie. Sandler, I mean.
Based on your description, I'm just going to agree with you. Not gonna put up any sort of argument that, oh, I don't know, I'm not going to play devil's advocate. I'm just going to say, yeah. That sounds terrible. Sounds like something I'm never going to watch.
Yeah, I mean, take how bad it sounds from my description and then like triple it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Times three.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff.
Speaking of bad things, so now it's time to end. Now it's time to blow ourselves up and get out of this podcast.
Yeah, they didn't bring they didn't find the goat on their way out. I was a little sad by that. I didn't close that particular story loop.
Well, I never understood. She says the goat wasn't there anymore. So how was there a Sandberg still at the wedding?
Oh, maybe the goat was like, wow, I'm out of here, and then I'm going to, you know, take life into my own hands and move on.
Or maybe she just killed that goat because she blew it up too much. And she probably, you know, didn't have the amount of C4 down exactly what she needed to be. Maybe there was a rounding error.
Hmm. Are you saying she over C4'd the goat? There's got to be a ratio of C4 to body mass?
Yeah, because, I mean, she's doing some math that kind of, like, breeze over real quick. So, yeah. I don't know. Maybe she just kind of guessed on the goat.
I mean, 4 equals mass times acceleration, so maybe she just accelerated that goat, like, out into the multiverse.
We never saw a scene where she put the goat on a scale or anything. So, you know, we don't know. We don't know how many newtons of force it takes to propel a goat to the future. maybe the goat's just traveling through time for the rest of eternity. It was so far removed from the timeline that they can't exist.
The goat is like the end of 2001 Space Odyssey. It's just in that sort of like slit scan time tunnel forever.
Yeah. Maybe dissolved to the end of the movie and there's a little goat embryo over the earth. So star goat. There's
a goat embryo floating over the earth. Yeah.
Maybe this would be sort of unsettling. Not a lot of embryos look great. Especially.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, way to embryo shame.
I mean, it's a phase. People grow out of it. Goats grow out of it too, I guess.
But
they still look like goats, but whatever. So let's blow ourselves to tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah, especially before you say anything else hurtful against
goats.
Goat embryos.
Are you canceled for my goat embryo shaming?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Calling the ACLU on your the GCLU.
Mm.
Stood there waiting, it'll be alright. When the morning Now I'm up in the air with the rain in my hair. I got nowhere to go, I can go anywhere, it'll be all